The coronavirus, COVID-19. This unprecedented global pandemic has changed everybody's life. It has made us angry and it has made us sad, but it has also made many of us branch out to our communities and old friends. It has made us stop and it has made us think and reflect on our lives. But whether we take these reflections and make changes when freedom comes is yet to be seen. And when it comes to the environment, it is of the greatest importance that these changes are made. The coronavirus has resulted in both positive and negative effects for our planet. It has created the opportunity for reassessment in how we move forward. Social media has been filled with pictures of clearer waters, clearer skies, and animals reclaiming land. But it will not stay this way if we forget all of our reflections when life returns to normal. I've interviewed some students from the university, Georgia Kavanagh, the head of UON's Sustainability Society, Meg Groom and Alexandria Hodge, and I also interviewed John Atherton, who is both a doctor and also heavily involved in sustainability within the university. All of these people have given their opinions on what effect they think the coronavirus has had on the planet. So, bad news first. No matter what we might be seeing on social media, COVID-19 has not been a complete environmental dream. Waste has become a significant issue around the country in many different forms. If we think back to the beginning of the pandemic, when panic buying was all the rage, it didn't take long for food to go off and ultimately end up in the bin. But even throughout lockdown, there has been a considerable rise in waste, with litter increasing after socially distanced picnics, and fly tipping becoming a very prominent issue, as many of us will have seen on the news. I asked the students how they think we should combat this increased fly tipping, and if they had witnessed it themselves wherever they are isolating.
Yeah, so at my uni house in Nottingham, there has been people always fly tip right outside our house since we've moved in. But I've noticed it all around more, like lots of pallets and like building materials have just kind of been left about. But I don't think like the fly tipping, like fly tipping is an issue, but I think we can change it to become a positive thing. You know, like cut down on consumerism, like we're all reusing stuff. Because on the Nottingham Mutual Aid group, it's been like everyone's really open to share their stuff, give away things for free. I got a Hoover for free, otherwise that would have cost a couple hundred. And then apps like Vinted have been used a lot more, Facebook Marketplace, where people just give away stuff for free or just pay for delivery or so. So I think that will change, and in turn that also makes us a tighter-knit community when we're exchanging things. Because people don't have the funds right now to be buying new stuff, or like a lot of shops can't deliver right now. And with this spare time, I feel like people are trying to go back to being more self-sufficient. I've become a lot more crafty. Like, I've always wanted to do these things, but I don't have the time. And now, like, I'm making little things and upcycling and repurposing items that I would have otherwise recycled or thrown away. So I'd like for that to continue, and then with the fly tip, in that we kind of change our attitudes towards it, that we use Freecycle more, and then Facebook Marketplace or the other places I listed. So it's an issue right now, but it can be changed into something positive.
I haven't personally seen this, I guess, because I haven't been outside that much. But I think it's definitely important sometimes to kind of emphasise why people should do something and give them a real incentive to act, rather than just giving them, you know, a straightforward, you should do this, without, you know, a real reason behind it. So perhaps having more encouragement of better environmental action because for a specific motive, maybe emphasising the moral incentive, you know, things like that.
Two different approaches there, and an interesting take on how we can turn fly tipping into a positive. We do now have the time to learn new skills and learn how to upcycle, but also with platforms such as Facebook Marketplace and apps such as Shpock, try giving it away for free. You never know what people will be grateful for, especially students or recent graduates needing furniture, and it is such an easy way to reduce your waste. Now, a more difficult increase in waste to manage has been the rise in single-use plastics. Before lockdown, companies known to promote reusable containers, offering discounts for those bringing in their own cups, for example, Starbucks, had to return to serving everything in single-use plastic cups for hygiene reasons. And this is very, very understandable. And more obviously, throughout the lockdown, single-use latex gloves, medical equipment, and masks have been necessarily being used once and discarded. The real problem with this, in my opinion, is when these gloves and masks have been incorrectly discarded and end up abandoned and littering the sides of the roads. But in such an unprecedented situation as this, we have had little choice but to rely on disposable products. I asked the students their opinions and whether they think that the increase in single-use plastics will undo the hard work of previous campaigns for reusable products.
I think overall, yes. I think justifiably people are concerned and aware about how pathogens spread and are trying to maintain hygienic and healthy practices by keeping surfaces clean and, you know, doctors wearing gloves and masks and things and scrubs. And I hope that we in the future, post-crisis, can have a sensible conversation about when it's safe to use reusable products and safe practices, for example, washing them at high temperatures to disinfect them. But I think it is something that we're going to have to discuss in the wider context. Generally, I think before this pandemic, it's something that I didn't have the knowledge to kind of question or tackle, but there is a lot of waste in the medical industry. And it's a very difficult question because you need to prioritise people's safety. But there must be a way of reducing the waste whilst also maintaining the high standards of hygiene that we have. It just might be more expensive or more timely, but we need to weigh up if that's worthwhile because of the huge amount of waste we have. So I think, yeah, this will have done a lot of damage, but maybe we can sort of use this as motivation to try and have a conversation, a broader conversation, not just about single-use items associated with COVID-19, but also just single-use items used in the medical industry and for hygiene, and about, are there any safe changes that we can make, and are there any safe ways we can swap in reusable products to reduce the waste while still keeping people safe?
I think because of the media attention that single-use plastics have received in the past few years, I don't think that there's necessarily a huge cultural shift right now going on that people are going to kind of transition back to using single-use plastics all the time. I definitely don't think that this is a lasting change, and people will definitely go back to kind of focusing on reusable products after this. But of course, it's been hard to adapt so quickly to this virus to, you know, produce things that are reusable whilst also being effective against the pandemic. If you're referring to, you know, the obviously even when we walk around now, we see kind of face masks discarded in the road and things like that. Obviously, yeah, that's a really awful consequence of kind of the use of unreusable materials at this time. But I definitely don't think that that negates all the positives that have come out of this, especially because kind of the pandemic as a whole, I feel like, has encouraged people to kind of reevaluate their lives and reevaluate what's important. So hopefully, yeah, people will take more of a stance on the climate crisis in the future.
Now, 2020 has been a very intense year from the start. It was only 4 months ago that the Australian wildfires were eventually extinguished and climate change was at the top of the agenda. However, very quickly that changed. Understandably, new priorities arose as corona spread further and further, and now, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement is taking its deserved place at the top of the agenda. None of these things can be argued to be less important, and some, like corona, are more pressing matters that need to be dealt with first. But when do we put the climate back as our main priority? The coronavirus has been a tragedy, and many lives have been sadly lost, but it has also provided us with the time to stop and think about moving forward in a new direction. However, with the need to get the economy moving, when is the right time for environmental concerns to override profits and get back on the government's agenda? I asked the students what they think the impact will be of climate change no longer being the topical crisis that it was after the Australian wildfires, and whether they think that governments will stop pushing for more sustainable changes now that it is not our number one priority.
I actually believe that it will continue. It definitely has dropped at the moment, you know, like everyone was terrified of what was happening, the world, we ruined it, and other people just had the climate change deniers, etc. But there's going to be a lot of change. People have had more time to reflect on every aspect. We've got a lot of more movements going, like with the Black Lives Matter movement. It's amazing, long overdue, but it's amazing. And you know, people just realise like they've lost jobs, companies have gone under, like their businesses don't care about them, and it's like it's time for real change in all aspects. So I think people are going to become more activism is going to become more normalised, you know, and people won't stand for this stuff. So personally, if they don't continue To push for sustainable changes, the government, and I'm surely I'll be signing petitions, whatever, I'll be doing letters. But it's hard to say with our current government. I don't feel that they don't care about sustainability at the moment. But there's a lot of independent organisations that are doing their bit, and I think we just need to focus more on those. Again, like, we've also realised, like, the government aren't actually helping us. Well, personally, I don't think they are at all. And we're just going to have to find help elsewhere as a community.
Yeah, again, obviously the climate crisis always gets pushed back behind other things, which obviously kind of with huge issues like this, like the pandemic, that's obviously it's important to focus on the pandemic over the climate crisis at times. But I think because it's become such a big issue in recent years, it's never going to be ignored anymore totally. And I feel like once everything's kind of under control, I think that definitely discussions will return back to sustainable change, especially because of all this evidence that we've had during the pandemic of kind of the benefits of reduced human activity on the environment.
I hope that once we start to recover from this pandemic, this health crisis, that people will continue to push for sustainable change. I think there's a genuine opportunity to try and rebuild industries to be more sustainable. Everything seems to have kind of come to a grinding halt. So as we slowly start things up, I think this is an opportunity to trial and introduce sort of more sustainable practices. So, for example, I'm really hopeful that the plans for London to close, really busy roads to cars or limit the motor traffic going on them and prioritise pedestrians and cyclists, I hope that it's a success. And I hope that it'll encourage other cities to do the same. It was, motivated by the terrible air quality of London. The World Health Organization, I think, says that air quality is one of the biggest killers globally. So I think I'm really hopeful that this scheme will work and it will encourage others, other cities to do the same. So I'm hopeful about that. And I think, as I said before, this really is an opportunity that I hope we won't ever have again and that we haven't had before. It's an absolute tragedy what's happened, but it would be nice if we could get some positives from the recovery. And another motivation is the way that employees in the fashion industry have been treated, the garment workers specifically. I think there's a perfect example of why we need to change the systems we currently have, and they're broken. And when there's a crisis, those people really suffer. Our current system doesn't look after them. So I hope that we can continue to push for change during the recovery rather than once everything's back to normal. I also hope that the increased visibility of wildlife and how people have been able to enjoy outdoors in this time, it might encourage them to nurture their local environment more. Seeing ecosystems and seeing the elasticity of nature and, seeing top predators and seeing more birds and actually recognising that the absence of a diverse and healthy ecosystem is bad, and noticing those absences and actually prioritising improving the diversity of our local ecosystems. So I hope that people can see that, and maybe it's an opportunity for hope that people can sort of push for. I heard a really interesting perspective on the So Hot Right Now podcast, who were interviewing Sir David Attenborough. And he was he was discussing the COP26, which is the UN climate change conference that was due to be held in Glasgow this year, and it's being postponed. And he hopes that actually postponing it to next year will encourage the UK to do more in terms of green and sustainable development. So I'm hopeful that climate change will still be very topical for governments, our government specifically, as we're hosting it, to encourage us to continue to push and not just push climate change back down the agenda. It's still a major threat, and it's all linked. So I'm hopeful that, if consumers put on pressure, if voters put on pressure on businesses and governments to still keep climate change a current issue, that we can do that.
But the coronavirus has not had a totally negative effect on the planet. Indeed, many positives have come out of it for sustainability. While we are all missing our summer holiday plans and wishing to be anywhere but at home right now, By isolating with our families, we have made a huge difference to global warming because the ozone layer has begun to repair itself due to considerable decrease in emissions from cars and planes and factories. This has also led to cleaner air and clearer skies and clearer water, for example, in the Venice canals. And in effect, the planet is returning to its natural state, which is healthier for us all. I asked the head of the Sustainability Society if they believe that the decrease in greenhouse gas emissions, most especially stalled airline emissions, will have had any positive impact in the long term. Has it given the planet a time to breathe, or will this good be negated once the industry starts again?
Obviously, since the pandemic began, we've had lots of stories in the news about kind of reduced CO2 emissions in the atmosphere and all the positive impacts that the virus has inadvertently had on the environment because of reduced human activity. And obviously, I'd hope that the lessons that we've learned from this pandemic will be carried on into the future. But obviously, there's no telling of how the world's going to recover from this and whether the reduced emissions are sustainable, reduced human activity will be incorporated into future systems. We really have no idea kind of how the world's going to look after the pandemic ends. So it's hard to say, but you would hope.
Speaking of emissions, the one thing we can all do on a day-to-day basis to reduce our carbon footprint is, of course, by taking public transport. But it is often crowded and unpleasant, and a car might seem like the nicer option than a bus or a train. What this lockdown has proven, however, if nothing else, is that many of us are able to work from home and do not need to go into the office every day. This is now inspiring a discussion between employees and their employers about a new way of working. More wish to work from home and more wish for flexible working hours so they don't have to commute during rush hour. And as long as the work is done, many people are beginning to look at these things as viable options. Reduce people on public transport leaves more space for others to use it, and as such, this change in working habits could have a positive effect on reducing our emissions. But at the end of the day, will more people work from home? And will more people choose to travel by public transport? Or will it continue to be avoided? I asked the students if they think that this might change people's working habits, leaving more room on public transport for people who might otherwise drive.
I think people will still need to travel to work, so in the lockdown at the moment, some people aren't able to work from home and they will need to, at some point, go back to work. And I think those that can work from home, I still think there will be a significant proportion of those people that will want to come into work once it's safe. Even from my personal experience, writing my dissertation at home, it was, you know, that's a relatively self-contained project except for your supervisor meetings. And I found that really difficult to do at home, not working and studying with people doing similar things and sort of being in a common struggle. Therefore, you know, I think people will still want to go into work once it's safe to do so, because working from home is challenging, and, you know, I think there's particular circumstances and particular people where it's actually more effective. So I think those that already drove to work will continue to do so. And I think there'll be a lot of people still going into work rather than working from home as we reach the end of the lockdown. And actually, I think the capacity of public transport is going to be reduced in order to keep the public safe. So London's street scheme, or street space scheme, was motivated by the reduced capacity of public transport. And they knew that an increased proportion of motorists on the road would be devastating for the air quality, which is already life-threatening. So what they're doing is they're repurposing some of the busiest roads to prioritise pedestrians and cyclists over motorists. And I think that could be used in urban places to reduce motor traffic and encourage people to use greener forms of transport whilst public transport is a reduced capacity, and then keeping that space for people that can't walk or cycle. But I think actually in rural areas where public transport is already very sparse, you are going to see an increase in commuter traffic as people drive in, because I think it will be difficult to regain momentum for schemes like car sharing and park and ride schemes and things whilst there's a loss of confidence in, you know, people mixing in public transport. So I think we could see some positive steps in urban areas if people follow London's scheme, and if London's scheme works well. But I think actually in rural areas we're going to see an increase in commuter traffic.
I think, like, it's going to change everything completely. It'll be a cultural reset. We'll be the decade generation, like, known for social distancing. But, of course, this can't all be avoided. People still have to go to work. People still go shopping and everything, and we want to support local businesses. But it will change, like, office spaces. Can't have people cramped in anymore, which in turn I think is just gonna be better for people's mental health as well at work, because the businesses need to look after them so much more than, like, legally, I guess. Now it's like you'll be under scrutiny more, but if people can have more space, like set lunch hours, things that kind of go under the radar, which isn't always moral at workplaces, I think that's going to hopefully diminish. I mean, that might be me being very idealistic, but yeah, then in turn that will make people much more happier, and we're more respecting people's spaces, which has again other positives, you know. We're just much more aware of other people's space boundaries and, like, hygiene, which for me is so crazy that, like, this whole world has had to relearn hygiene. But as long as it leads positive,
yeah, I think definitely there's been evidence that you know, companies can adapt to people working from home, and people don't necessarily have to go into the offices, and also people have kind of realized that they prefer to work from home, so surely that will have some kind of impact on public transport.
A final positive, if nothing else, is the reclaiming of nature by animals. This is a very visible thing which has been spread around social media and which has inspired joy in many. Ducks have been seen in the Trevi Fountain and deer have been seen sleeping on our abandoned roads. But should this be a concern? Animals do not understand lockdown and many may continue to sleep on roads as we begin to use them again. On the whole, however, I know that for many of us, seeing a greater array of species in our areas and in seeing nature reclaim its place in more developed places is a cause for joy. I asked the students if they think the reclaiming of land by nature is a positive, or does it pose more of a risk for them in the long run? For example, animals being run over or becoming tamer.
Being able to hear bird song, just generally, yeah, there's a lot more wildlife around. I didn't realise, like, what a huge impact reduced human activity would have on my local surroundings, because it's not very kind of nature oriented my surroundings, it's all buildings and roads, but even here there's kind of loads of wildlife coming out, which I didn't even know was kind of in our area. I think the reclaiming of land by nature is definitely a good thing, especially because I think people can kind of tangibly see the impact of reduced human activity. Because again, yeah, that's a big criticism. People kind of don't want to act to reduce the impact of the climate crisis because they don't see any kind of immediate results for themselves, and they don't kind of see what the outcome could be. And I think it's just evidence, you know, to the naked eye that everyone can see the changes that can be made.
Now we've looked at some of the negatives and some of the positives that have arisen out of the coronavirus in the last 3 to 4 months. But I wanted to make it more personal and see what people were noticing in their local areas.
So I'm fortunate enough to live in the countryside when I'm not at uni, and that's been so nice in this time to relax. And I certainly think I'm much more able to hear birds at the moment because there's literally no other background noise. There might be, like, some sheep and cows, but it's mainly birds. And it's funny, I probably wouldn't have said before that there was background noise from traffic and cars, but there definitely was. I can definitely only really hear birds at the moment. It's hard to know. I know there's been a lot of reports of more animals and, you know, more interesting species being around. So it's hard to know whether I am seeing that or whether it's just I'm thinking about it more and I'm more aware of it. But I've definitely, you know, I've heard cuckoos for the first time, I've seen woodpeckers and buzzards, and that's been really amazing to see that and kind of stop and actually pay attention to what they're doing and where they are. So that's been really nice. An odd thing that's happened is loads and loads of seagulls have come inland. You'll find like 20 in a field, and we don't normally get them unless there's a really bad storm because we're like over 10 miles from the coast. So that's kind of weird. Seeing loads and loads of seagulls. I think it's because the tourist resorts, you know, for the past few weeks, there hasn't been the food from the food vendors and stuff. Like, they're mainly scavenging pasties and chips and things, and that's not there. So they're obviously coming for more food, but it's a bit weird, and I don't know what impact that has on the local birds. But That's a bit of a funny sight. Lots of seagulls in a field, nowhere near the sea. A sadder thing that's actually been happening is the damage by the increase of visitors. I think it's been so important that people have been able to come outside and exercise safely and fresh air and enjoy nature. I think it's been so important, and we've been so fortunate that we've been able to do that, particularly if you're lucky enough to live in the countryside. But I think it's been a shame that there's been an evident, you know, there's increased rubbish, and for example, people aren't parking in the empty car parks. I have sympathy if the car parks are full, but certainly in my local area, they're not full, but people are still not using them, and they're driving across the moor and parking on the moor. And I just, it's kind of unnecessary and mindless, because livestock live on the moor and that's their grazing, and you're damaging the moor. You know, the moor's so dry at the moment. It really needs all the help it can get. And there's definitely lots of people having picnics and barbecues and sort of having tents up in the day, which is fine, but you need to make sure you take your rubbish away. And it's a bit irresponsible having bonfires and barbecues when everything's so bone dry. And, you know, there's lots of foals and sheep and lambs and things. So I think it's the same nationally. It's a really difficult conversation of not wanting to discourage people from enjoying nature, because it's so important. And I think it's a positive thing that people feel more connected to nature and are enjoying it more. But how do you get people to be more mindful and learn to enjoy the environment whilst reducing their impact whilst they're enjoying it? So that's definitely something I've noticed, and I'm sure that's the case across the country. But it's definitely been nice paying more attention to nature.
Well, I personally live in a very busy city, and I live next to a kind of a big main road, and usually all I can hear are cars going by all day. And obviously right now I don't hear any of that, and I've actually started to hear birdsong, which I've never had before in my life where I live. So yeah, that's just a really nice impact of the kind of the environmental changes that we've seen, and I hope that that will be continued even after the pandemic's over.
I live between Nottingham and London, and obviously in London, like, clean air is an issue. We've got the highest, like, pollution. So I haven't been able to notice any change in that personally, but it is with the littering. I have noticed a difference. There's less litter on the floor. I don't know if it's just me, but I think I am noticing more of the birds being more lively and just like being able to notice things in nature. Like when I go on my walks, everything's less populated by people and traffic, that you see all these beautiful little insects and everything more. So that's definitely a change and a lovely benefit.
The overwhelming answer there was that the noticeable outcomes have been positive. Nature is being seen and people are appreciating the nature around them and noticing it more. Waste is of course a very prominent issue that we are all seeing, but people are focusing on the good, which is a win for both sustainability and humanity. But the real questions to ask now that we have looked at an array of consequences for the planet are, will people have more empathy towards sustainability? And what will be the long-term effects?
I find that a bit of a hard one, because it's ideally I'd like to say yes, I think people have, but that could be in my circle. You know, I'm already surrounded by a lot of environmentally conscious people. But you've seen all the news reports about how, you know, the single-use masks and the gloves have been just like littered everywhere. And it's hard. If people want to be hygienic, you want to get rid of stuff, you know, you don't want to reuse. And then also everyone's got bigger things to deal with right now if they're not already like environmentally conscious. You know, people have lost their jobs, you know, they're just worried about this uncertainty of the future. So it definitely come from a place of privilege to gain more awareness during this time, I'd say. You know, we have time to study about it and research, and like if you have the funds during a pandemic when most people are on furlough to buy like reusable masks or what have you, like it always just very depends on the person.
I think definitely the stories, yeah, in the news about clear links between reduced human activity and a more healthy environment should hopefully encourage people to engage with improving the climate crisis and taking their own action towards the situation. But of course, at this time, there's many other stories that are taking precedence. Obviously, the pandemic itself, and then Black Lives Matter, and other kind of international crises of what's considered more of more immediate importance. And obviously, the climate issue constantly gets kind of put to the back of the agenda behind more anthropocentric and immediate crises. But obviously, it's important to tackle the climate crisis now to prevent the kind of later consequences. I think obviously, because it's probably going to take such a long time for the world to recover from the pandemic, that surely there will be a kind of perhaps short to medium term impact from all the reduced emissions. And hopefully also because obviously with climate change, a lot of the criticisms of kind of inputting certain plans of action are that we don't have enough evidence to support them, and kind of big corporations and institutions are reluctant to kind of input methods that would improve the environment because, you know, they don't want to put funding into things that might not actually offer them any real benefits. But obviously, there are clear links now between emissions and improved environments. So hopefully that'll be an incentive for companies to, you know, make an effort towards improving their commitment to environmental values in the future.
I'd ideally like all this to be beneficial, but realistically, I don't know. Like, I really can't tell, and like, it just depends with the people I hang out with and surround myself by. We already care about the environment, so I do have like a biased view, I guess. And so it's just wishful thinking, but I really hope that it is, that does come a reality.
Now, I've touched on the effects that I've been most aware of, but I asked the students if they had any final comments, and Meg Groom offered a very interesting insight into fast fashion, a known problem that we have talked about on the show in the past, but also the human rights and working conditions aspect of it that is something I was not aware of any more so during this lockdown than I am on a day-to-day basis. But her comments are definitely worth a listen.
So personally, I'm quite interested in the impact of the fashion industry on the environment and the social consequences of our fashion industry. And I definitely think that this crisis has highlighted the broken system that we currently have. The Clean Clothes campaign are a really great campaign, and I recommend like checking them out. They've been running a live blog throughout the crisis with people contributing that work in garment factories in India, Cambodia, Bangladesh and Thailand. And it's worth a read. There are some quite shocking accounts on there of what's been happening, specifically looking at garment factories, but also the wider things happening in those countries. But, you know, we're seeing things like big brands, fashion brands, have refused to pay factories for clothes that they have ordered and factories have made sort of pre-lockdown, and the lockdown's happened and companies don't want to buy the products. And actually, some brands have gone back on that from pressure from consumers demanding them to pay up. But actually, when you read in, there's been examples where they are going to pay it, but it's still a delayed payment. And the nature of the way our fashion industry works is factories can't afford these delays. They need to be paid on the day that they were promised because the margins that they're working at are so small. And, you know, there have been cases where factories have been put under this financial pressure, and they've actually selectively fired union members from their workforce, which is unacceptable, and we wouldn't accept that here. So I think we need to look at that critically. And I think we need to look at the way that big brands have continued to encourage us to buy and consume during lockdown. You know, specifically items that were evidently lockdown slogan t-shirts and things like that. Those can't have been made pre-lockdown, and they've been made in lockdown. And who's making that when we're in a pandemic? Who's being made to go to work to make a t-shirt? So that's just a personal interest of mine that I've been following and wanted to raise. And I hope that we don't forget how big brands have treated garment workers in this time. And actually, you know, as this is an opportunity in other industries, perhaps the slow restart of the fashion industry is an opportunity to ask the fashion industry to kind of try and build itself on a more sustainable model and treat its garment workers as fairly as we would like to be treated.
Now, having heard what the students had to say, I interviewed John Atherton over Zoom with the same questions to gain a broader perspective on what this means for the university, for adults with jobs, and for him personally. So we'll start off pretty broad. What do you think the long-term effects of the virus will be on the environment?
So So I think, of course, in general, the long-term effects, the effects of the virus are bad. You know, lots of people have died of the virus. It's, you know, it's been a huge effect on the economy. That in itself means that fewer jobs and other problems. So let's not get away from the fact that the virus has been bad. But I think some of the sort of behaviours and other changes that the virus has made in the country and in us have been hugely good, of course. And you can see that at the sort of top level. I mean, we've had, I think, the longest period without any coal-fired power generation. You know, the projected rise in CO2 emissions this year is the lowest ever, I think. So, you know, we're not travelling. So all those things, all those sort of results of it, of our behaviour, our response to it, I suppose, have been hugely good.
I was just looking ahead to some of the questions, because what you said there was saying, you know, we're not travelling and we're not doing all this. Do you think that's sustainable? And do you think that the decrease in greenhouse gas emissions will have a positive impact long-term properly? Or do you think that next year, when everybody's buying all their plane tickets and rushing off on holiday, that's going to negate the good that we've seen this year?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question, Sarah. I think that, to some extent, is up to all of us. I do think that there's a will to carry on, you know, I think that's a will in all of us who are really into this agenda, but a more general will as well. So, for example, I was reading that the EU launched this green recovery thing in May, and that was signed by a huge number of high-profile business leaders. So I think there's a will amongst many, many people not to go back to where we were, but to use this as a springboard into a new, more environmentally sustainable society. But I worry, like you do, that people might slip back and that might take the lazy way to recovery, which is the old way. And I think it's all of us who work in this area, you know, have got some influence in it, all of you students who are activists in this area, I think it's hugely important that we continue to keep the profile of this high and make sure we don't slip back and do the lazy things. But I do think there's some hope there. You know, governments, EU, business leaders kind of want to do this too. And I think with help, they will manage it. I'm very hopeful about it.
So obviously, it seems unthinkable now, but there was a point in this year when we had the Australian wildfires.
Yeah.
And it was the climate crisis was top of the agenda, top priority. And now it isn't. And one of the problems people have said about coronavirus, of the many, is that the climate crisis is no longer top of the agenda.
Yeah.
Do you think that because we've seen decreased pollution and everything you've mentioned, do you think that people will have gained more awareness and empathy towards it? Or do you think because it's not top of the agenda, it's going to take longer to get back to the top of the agenda?
I think that that's a mixed picture. So there's no doubt that when you have something like the coronavirus or more recently the huge Black Lives Matter issues, those things are hugely, hugely important and have to be top of the agenda for the time. I mean, we just wouldn't be being fair on other things if we didn't allow them to go up. I think that environmental sustainability is more something that is always on the agenda and should always be a huge driver in what we do. And there'll be periods when it really does rise completely to the top. And I think now, as we move towards recovery, it's really important that it does get to the top of the agenda again, because the recovery has got to be a green recovery. You know, we mustn't go back to the way we were before. You know, even the new normal must be a new, better normal for environmental sustainability. And we can't just assume, as you said in your earlier question, that we're going to get there. You know, it's going to take pressure from us on government and industry. They I think many of them do want to go in this direction, but we have to make sure that it's a new, better normal as we work towards it. So I do think that, behind your question, that we do need to get environmental sustainability back up the agenda in the next period as we move to recovery.
And speaking of the new normal, do you think this will change people's working habits to a new normal that's better? So leaving room on public transport, for example?
Yeah, hugely. I think it will change working habits hugely. So, you know, one of the biggest things we've seen in the university is working from home. And, you know, of course, all working can't be from home. You know, we've got we're teaching students, people are doing laboratory research. There are all sorts of things that can't happen from home. But the new better normal, I think, will involve more working from home. I think people will do that more. People will travel less to things like conferences and other events. You know, this sort of interaction I'm having with you will become much more commonplace over Zoom and other things. So, you know, I think we've learned many, many things that will help. You know, I was thinking that travel, as you say, that's, there's a short-term hit in, I think there'll be an interesting time in travel. People are traveling much less at the moment. With some of the government stuff at the moment, people might travel more by cars when they start, which would be a bad thing. But I think in the medium term, it will be a good thing because travel will be less. As you say, for the first time, we're ahead of the Germans in our public transport working well. The stats are that we've got more things working on time. And, you know, with less pressure on travel, including public travel, I think we will get to a place where that is a bit better. But it's really just reduced travel overall that's going to be good and more. Now, I've learned some of the meetings I've been to in the university over the last sort of month or so, I've had more people at them because more people can go to them, because by Zoom or Teams or something, you can get more people there. And the interaction has been really good. So I see, you know, travel, you know, I look at the energy expenditure in our university, that's down to less than half. So our CO2 emissions are down hugely. Now, of course, it can't quite stay at that level because students have to be there at university and that will go back. But it's no reason it should go back to the levels it was at before. And I also think that, you know, by the enforced sort of being away from things, you know, we have all engaged a little bit more in some form or other with, you know, the environment and nature. And that is a bit of a help as well, I think. So I think there are lots and lots of ways that, you know, we've gained from this, if you like.
Yeah, you offered some interesting perspectives there that, I mean, I've read about some of those, but I didn't think about the decreased use of energy and that within the buildings themselves.
Yeah. That is a nuanced thing, of course, because when you get to winter, if more people are at home, that means they're heating their houses rather than heating buildings in the university. So it's not as obvious as you might think, but certainly it shows that we can do, you know, not just from not being there now, but we can do hugely better. I expect, as you know, inevitably, you know, we want to do some things face to face. We want to be on campus. We want to do that. Inevitably, it won't be as much saving as we've got now, but we need to, you know, get back to something which is a new normal, which where we think much more carefully about it, and we can save a lot more. And I think, you know, we should then redouble our efforts to do the things that we have been doing, you know, energy generation on site, you know, much improved build, you know, greener buildings which use less energy, all of that sort of stuff in the new normal we've got to get right back to. Some of that costs, of course, but I think that's where we've got to lobby. You know, that's we've got to be saying, you know, this is throughout the country, including in the university, we've got to be saying we don't necessarily want to do things in the absolute cheapest way. We are saving money by all this. I mean, being away, I use huge amount less paper, I travel less, we're saving huge amounts of money. So these things do go hand in hand a bit, but we have got to find the green solution to things. Not necessarily the cheapest solution to things. And often in the long term, if you think in a long term way, the green solution will also be the cheapest solution. So,
yeah, and I think that's a really good takeaway from that, really, is people need to think in the long term at this point now and not in the short term.
And if we can get that, if we can stop that lazy return, which we know where people want to recover very quickly, and that means just sort of going back to the old ways and polluting and stuff just to get back quickly. That would be lazy. But I'm really, really buoyed by the fact, you know, that business leaders, government in many situations, and us as people who believe strongly in this, are aware of that and want to avoid it. I think that means if we really work together, we can avoid it.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. we all need to work hard. I mean, in some ways, you know, I hope and you hope that we have to take some responsibility for this ourselves, and I think we really do have to get there and make our voice heard on this. And I like the idea earlier on that, you know, at some stage soon, this does need to rise back to the top of the agenda, because otherwise our voice won't be heard on this. We need to really make our voice heard.
Yeah, I think you're right that this isn't the time, but I think when this is maybe in a year's time or when this is over and gone, it definitely needs to be thought about.
I think before a year, I honestly do. I mean, you know, we mustn't make the issues of the day any less. They are hugely important issues. But I think as we all think of recovery, which we're beginning to think of now, we're planning for return to university, for new term, all those sorts of things. Now is the time to be starting to get those things up the agenda. I think if we wait a year, Sarah, we'll have missed the boat on this. I just think we need to be quicker than that.
And on a slight change of topic, as we will, some of the negatives we've seen from coronavirus are things like huge mountains of waste. So obviously when we had panic buying, there was so much food waste on that.
Yeah.
And increased single-use plastics, because yeah. Starbucks and all these companies, when they were still open, you weren't able to use recyclable bottles. Do you think this is something that's going to set back movements towards...
I don't think it will set it back. I mean, I think it is a bit unfortunate. Inevitably, things happen so quickly that the adaptions had to be really quick. And, you know, I can't blame people really for, you know, panic buying and stuff. You know, I didn't do it myself, but I understand why people did it. You know, I think we need to now adapt to what the new normal or the better normal will be. And you know, I think that we can do that. If the messages get out to us and we behave in the right way, we can use their stuff. We don't need to stockpile stuff now. Everyone understands that now, where we are now. So I think that can stop. I think that single-use plastic's interesting. That has increased over this period, you know, with home deliveries and this sort of stuff. But I think, again, that's an area we still need to work very hard at. You know, if we work towards local production of foods and other things, that can help. You know, I think buying locally can help. And even with the single-use plastics, I'm seeing things very different from how they used to be, you know, maybe a year ago. So I had a delivery the other day, and, you know, I was really disappointed because, you know, when you get a delivery, things come in bags rather than you taking your own bag and you think, oh, that's really awful. But I looked at the bags, and to be fair to the supermarket, it said on the outside that these bags are made of plastic that's been recycled, and they're multi-use bags, and when you put them back, they can again be recycled. So they're making a bit of an effort. Now, we need to make more of an effort, but it does look different. There are sort of signs there that things are looking different to how they were. So, yes, it's not all good, but I do think there's progress being made.
And I think that's really important, I mean, you know, at any time, because this is something that we've said in the show throughout the year, is that we can do our best, students can do our best, people on the, you know, individual basis can do their best, but it is these corporations who really need to be actually making the effort.
Yeah.
That's really, really promising that things like this are being seen.
It is. Sorry to interrupt. The corporations, I think I agree with you, do need to make the effort. But I also think that whilst there's, you know, the fact that business leaders are getting together in Europe and signing something about the green recovery is a good thing. But we as the public need to keep the pressure on, and we need to show through our buying and our consumerism that is what we value. Otherwise, they really won't make the effort. So there's lots of reasons for hope, and they currently are making the effort, but we need to accept responsibility of that as well, and we need to keep the pressure on, I think.
Yeah, I do definitely agree. I definitely agree that it needs to come from everybody.
Yeah.
One of the other issues about waste that we've seen has been the increased fly tipping. And I watched a documentary on it, and it just is horrendous. It's everywhere. And it's going to be difficult to deal with that anyway on a cleanup basis, but it's just all over the countryside, really.
Yeah.
Have you witnessed it yourself, and how do you think we should be approaching this?
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of it, but like you, I've seen on the news and things. So I say, no, I don't doubt that it's happening and hugely bad. I think it's interesting. So I think there are two aspects to it myself. So I haven't seen a huge amount on the sort of general news and general things about it. And, you know, there have been documentaries and things about it, but not, you don't see it all over everything else. And I think actually if the press stood up a little bit and did a bit more here, brought it to people's awareness, that's very, very powerful. I think that would help, you know. So again, we've all got, you know, a bit of a responsibility here. But I also think that in the new normal, as councils and others sort of also adapt to the new normal, you know, they've got to step up a bit as well and cope with the situation we've got, so people don't do it. But you know, I think really the people that do it need to understand much better why it's a bad thing. I think some of them are lazy, some of them genuinely just don't understand. I don't understand that myself, but some of them don't. So, you know, it's about education, it's about social pressure, it's about the press and just everyone saying it's a bad thing, but it is also about the council stepping up a bit as well in this and coping with the new normal, I think.
Yeah, I think people are eager for charity shops and things to be opening.
Yeah, I agree.
Which will be beneficial again, because charity shops are something we promote to stop fast fashion or fast usage, yeah. Really.
Charity shops are great. It's, yeah. My daughter clothes herself almost entirely from charity shops, which is great. You know, they're superb.
We've seen some things with animals as well. So we've had issues with, the zoos have now said they should be able to reopen soon enough. And also animals have been reclaiming nature, so that's a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've seen things in China where animals have now been taken off lists that are also a positive. Yeah. Do you think that this might have a change towards nature in that way, towards animals, towards how we are treating our animals? Do you think there's going to be significant, important change, or do you think it's actually been more harmful for them?
I think that we've actually seen a period where animals and nature has thrived. And as you say, there is some real evidence of that with things coming off lists and so on, endangered lists. So it's amazing, isn't it, what nature can do and what nature can do in a really short time. Just incredible. And again, I think that's something we've got to... People have been interested in it. I think it's something that will really help. And I don't see any negatives in it, you know. Are animals tamer? Could more animals be run over on the road? That sort of thing. Possibly a little bit. But I think the huge positives that have come from this, both in terms of animal and nature recovery in a very, very short time, and in terms of our awareness about diversity in animal and plant populations, you know, well outweigh those things. Hugely more important.
So have you noticed any benefits personally? What is going on in the war area of the country?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So... Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, and it's some quite subtle things. I mean, I know other people have said this, but one of my interests is looking at stars. And that is just amazing. I mean, it's just so much clearer. You know, there's a little hill near me and I can go to the top of the hill and I can see Lincoln. I mean, it's just amazing how much clearer the sky and the air is. As well as looking after environmental sustainability in the university, I'm also a doctor. And, you know, I'm not a respiratory doctor, but many of my friends, this is a bit, you shouldn't really just go on single examples, but people I know with asthma, for example, seem to have fewer symptoms at the moment. So that's another thing that I'm just seeing on a sort of case-by-case basis. So, yeah, huge numbers of things. And, of course, as someone who works in the university, it's affecting me hugely because I'm working from home and all of the things about travel to and from work, you know, all of those things are hugely... So my life has been really affected by it. But the things I notice outside most, if I'm honest, are the clean air and the clear air, and it just seems a healthier place, the planet, at the moment.
Which is an interesting takeaway, I think, from this pandemic that was a big... Well, that is and was a big threat to people's lives. Yeah. But yeah. On the flip side of that, it has made a healthier planet to come back to, I think.
Yeah. And let's not lose that. I mean, no one should ever say that the pandemic is a good thing because of that. That's outrageous. But, you know, it's been a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. But how we've reacted to it and how we've been forced to react to it has led to this good byproduct on the planet. And that's what we mustn't lose. Now, that's happened almost by accident. But we've now got to grasp that and move forward with it and make sure that that does become the new normal and we don't slip back to something else.
And finally, really, you've made some good points throughout this, talking about looking at long-term effects and whatnot. Do you have any further comments or takeaways that you think people need to have?
I think the biggest takeaway, Sarah, is what we've said through this, that, you know, now is a time of huge opportunity. We've seen how the planet can benefit from an enforced change in behaviour. And now what we need to do as we move to recovery, we just need to grasp that, learn all of the good things we've learned from this. Now, moving forward as a university, you know, we're going to have a bit less money as a university. That often goes hand in hand with environmental issues. You know, if we use less paper, we save money and we save the planet. If we use less energy, we save money and we save the planet. So these things often go hand in hand. And we've just got to make sure that as we do move forward to the new normal, it's a new green recovery normal, just not a recovery normal.
Thank you so much for listening to this special. If there's anything to take away from this, it is that we have been presented with a unique and unprecedented opportunity to move forward from this tragedy with sustainability in mind and make a real and tangible impact. But it is up to us all to make a concerted effort and to think about our own impacts. We cannot be lazy or things will return to what they were. This show is called 12 Years because scientists gave us that long to make a change before our impact was almost irreversible. And this is our opportunity to sort things out, because if we don't, and if we don't care, then this planet will continue to die. We have all worked so hard to stay inside and protect others in order to defeat this terrible virus, but we all need to work just as hard for our home to recover from our own impacts. Let's take inspiration from humanity during this time, as opposed to becoming a disease ourselves.
Think about the generations and to say we want to make it a better place for our children and our children's children so that they know it's a better world for them and think they can make it a better place.
There's a place in your heart and I know that it is love. Brighter than tomorrow, and if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. In this place, you feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are ways to get there if you care enough for the living. Make a little space, make a better place. Heal the world. Straight.